Welcome to Beyond Startups, the podcast by the Entrepreneurship Center at the University of St. Andrews. My name is Ellie, and today we are joined by Juno Lee, founder of Combini. Juno graduated from the University of St. Andrews in 2019. Inspired by the Combinis, or convenience stores in East Asia, Combini sells healthy and delicious ready-to-eat meals combining the flavors of Korea and Japan. You can find Combini Co. on South Street in St. Andrews, and soon also in their new store opening in Edinburgh. Welcome, Juno.
My name is Juno Lee. I am South Korea. I was raised in Seoul until I was 12. Then I moved to Japan, Tokyo, with my family. Tokyo was my home for about 10 years, but I only lived there full-time for about 4 years, going to school there, 3.5 years, because I was also attending boarding school in America, away from home. I was there for, again, about 3.5 years. Went to a lovely unorthodox school in the mountains and hills of Vermont where I was farming and milking cows.
Wow.
And then I moved to Scotland for university in St. Andrews. And for me, entrepreneurship began with music. I worked with in the music industry as an artist from 15, 16 in Japan, writing music and, producing music. And so that was sort of my start. And then when I moved to America to the boarding school, I started my first business, which was an ice cream brand. And the reason why we started an ice cream brand was because I was milking cows every morning, waking up at 5 a.m. And beautiful Jersey cows. Jersey cows are the cutest. You go up at the hills.
Cuter than Scottish Highland cows?
Oh, I mean, they're different breed. Jersey cows are extremely cute. Their milk is delicious because it's like high fat content. Mm-hmm. But no cow beats the Scottish cow. So, yeah, very emo and stylish.
Yeah. Very. That's so adorable.
So, but do you milk those cows? Those are male milk cows, no?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I've only ever looked at photos of them, so.
So I was basically working in this farm every day and then kind of got curious, are we actually consuming the milk we produce? I was always curious. I asked a lot of questions since I was little, and that question seemed relevant because I was working really hard every morning. Mm-hmm. And I found out that we weren't using the milk that we produced because the school was losing about $250,000 each year just for having the program, the barn program.
Wow.
So they took that as sort of an educational investment, and they need to make some of those losses by selling the milk, because obviously it's cheaper for us to consume our own milk.
Yeah.
Buy cheap milk. Than to consume the milk we produce. So that to me felt like a betrayal. So to fix that, we needed to figure out a way to utilize the school's milk. And for me, that was, okay, a business enterprise. If we can build a brand that utilizes milk, whether it's a Greek yogurt product or a milk product or an ice cream product, then this way we can buy the milk from the school and then we can pay homage to the hard work that goes into it through an enterprise. And that's sort of my first entry, my experience with starting a business.
Wow.
And then I graduated from high school. So I was a high school student back then. So I think I was 17, 18, 18 years old, 18, 19, 20, 21. and then I came to St. Andrews. And ever since I think, start a business where you go through the process of, building something or, having an idea and then seeing it come through in real life, then you kind of want that adrenaline again. Mm-hmm. So ever since I got to the UK, got to St. Andrews, I was always looking to do something. Mm-hmm. Just being student wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Combini was the idea that that sort of came to us second year. Combini means convenience store in Japanese. Mm-hmm. I was coming from Japan, obviously. Japan was home for me, although I was coming from America. And yeah, combinis are something that is an integral everyday part of anyone living in Japan.
Absolutely.
Convenient, fresh, delicious foods, and also useful items you can buy in every block of the city. And I thought that the biggest problem we had, at least personally, in St. Andrews was I couldn't get something like what I could in a konbini. Mm-hmm. Healthy, fast.
Delicious.
Delicious, fresh food in a convenience store in konbini. And so that was sort of the lineage or the roots of the brand, of the idea. But I started with my then academic father, and to us, the brand identity, the visuals, the feel, the experience was so important. Mm-hmm. That we didn't want to just create a 7-Eleven.
Of course.
We wanted to create something that can be there is a cultural value to it too. Mm-hmm. That has a strong brand identity and something that we'll be proud of making. So design and the sort of the creativity behind the brand was always an important part of building this. That's how basically started konbini, and that's a long-winded introduction. And I've recently finished my service in the Marine Corps, which I tried to push aside as long as I could, and to an extent where I was afraid to go home.
Mm.
And I didn't want to do anything with Korea because of my fear of military service and things like this.
Right.
And so I faced the music wholeheartedly by joining the Marines, and I finished my service last year. I think it's almost exactly 1 year since mm-hmm. I've finished my service.
Wow. I noticed that you mentioned music quite a few times throughout your introduction. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's something that's influenced your business decisions or how you went into entrepreneurship at all?
Konbini as a brand, there was always the musical extension that I try to force. Mm-hmm. I think but the thing is, from the store experience, right, music is an integral part of it. Now I decided to make a more business related influence decision on the music. To be honest, we have to pay a lot of money for mm-hmm. licensing and stuff like this. So in order to save money, I'm basically using a license-free music playlist stuff, right, which is obviously, it bothers me a lot, but it's a business. And I've learned over the past few years to separate a bit of that personal identity from the business. Pros and cons to doing it. Pros, obviously, it's full on just you, your identity, it's passion. The downside of it is if it's so personal to you, everything's going to feel a lot more personal, and mm-hmm. you don't really need that because it's already high stress and high pressure. As more people get involved and as years go, I think trying to separate it, not having the business be too much of your, just an extension of yourself, I think is healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to say.
So kind of like a de-identification with it.
It will always have the heritage and the lineage. Mm-hmm. But if it's basically an extension of you, every point, every touch point is an extension of you, then no one's going to be you. So how are you going to be able to delegate or stuff like that? For sure, I can't be fussing about music, and I just don't. That's not as important as it was before. It was integral part of our brand for sure. But to me, the financial healthiness and also ease of decision making and less of micromanaging is more important. So I've decided, okay, there's a level, if it's like a 5-star experience is being able to curate everything that we make and also even producing the music we make, having the store, like that would be the 5-star ultimate experience. Yeah. What's a realistic thing we could do? A 3-star experience should be fine. So we're going to save money on loyalty. And loyalty.
Yeah.
And even we were sponsoring jazz music events.
Right.
When I initially started konbini, I tried to make music work I try to keep that identity in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that no matter what I did, music was always just, it was always there with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, yeah, there was a lot of, there's a long period of time in which I also was in denial and try to kind of push away that sort of musical identity of mine, because it was, there was a lot of things mixed up in there, and it also meant, to me, music meant home.
Mm-hmm.
Asia, and my relationship wasn't very clear. It was a difficult one.
And how long has it been, or how long did the process from conceiving the idea for Konbini to, you know, going through with everything take you?
The ideation stage was very quick. Basically, initially, my co-founder and I wanted to build a Chipotle version, Asian version of Chipotle. So instead of tacos and stuff like that, and then choosing the ingredients, we would start with noodles or rice.
Right.
And then we would have, you know, other stuff, bulgogi or like vegetables and stuff like this. So initially we were calling the concept donburi, mm-hmm. which means something on top of a bed of rice, which is basically beanie bowl.
Yeah.
But hot food, and it would be made to order, right? You can choose as you go, like Chipotle. And then, so we talked about this since I was in, you know, my first year, actually. And then we didn't go ahead with it. And then ultimately, when my co-founder, who was my academic father, was graduating, we met up, and he was wanting to start like a sushi restaurant or something, because mm-hmm. he was doing a thing called Sushi with triple O, and it was like pop-up doing right. like sushi stuff, like rolls. He wanted to make that into like an actual establishment. And then he asked for help, and I said, okay, I think we should build something, because obviously ever since the Donburi and that project, it was always on our mind. Mm-hmm. So let's build something. Let me think about it. And the next day we met for coffee again, and I said, I think we should call it Konbini. Konbini means convenience store, these things. And mm-hmm. Sure, we can have sushi, all that's good, but we got to have the essence of donburi in there too. And I don't want to build a sushi restaurant. I want to build something that can scale, and an iconic brand that embraces the heritage of konbinis in Japan. And so we wanted to create, and so the Konbini kind of name set that very day. And then we went away for break. He graduated. I went for my second year break, and I was working in venture capital in Japan, and I was writing up the business plan
while I was doing your internship.
Yeah, while I was doing my internship. But my mentor was also an entrepreneur, and he started many companies. And he told me personally, and I told him, like, you know, may I spend some of my time, and just because I wanted to be honest,
mm-hmm.
and I really respected him. And then he said, well, this is what entrepreneurs do when you're in a workplace and you're getting paid to work. You spend 70% of the time, 30% of the time for yourself. Like,
mm-hmm.
that's the way to do it. So, wow. You know, very he encouraged
honest me. Advice.
Very, very good. Very lucky. So I did that, and I even got to get feedbacks from him too, you know. So as soon as we returned, I returned as early as I could after the internship from Tokyo. And the moment I set foot in St. Andrews, from there on, it was game on, and I didn't go home for 4 years.
Wow.
It didn't take us long to finalize the concept and get it going, but it took us a long time to get a property.
Mm-hmm.
It was near impossible in St. Andrews for a 21-year-old and a 23-year-old, 22-23-year-old to get a 12-year lease on a property. And at the time, St. Andrews was so competitive. Obviously now the bubble sort of is affected by everything that's happened. So a lot of businesses are closing, a lot of empty premises.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, impossible. You had to pay key money. You had to pay money in order to be able to get a lease. And the terms were not good. So
mm-hmm.
that took us about 6 months, and that included the winter. And I'm a very impatient person. I was going a little bit crazy. The good thing was I was also a student, so my energy was a little bit dispersed. But I told my co-founder back then, said, if this doesn't work, I think we should pivot. We should do something else. So I said, like, what's something that bothers you most about this town, mm-hmm. St. Andrews? And I said, housing bothers me the most.
Yeah.
What about community homes? And we can change the way, like, property management works in this town. Mm. And we can target every university town in the UK. So, like, basically changing the management system of property management from both the landlords and the tenant side. And we could do that because obviously we were in the other end. We know what experience that we wanted. And then also implementing a lot of technology to make the viewing stuff to, like, you know, basically changing that mm-hmm. entire interface of that experience. And, you know, obviously we're very unhappy with how things were done in St. Andrews. So, like, that was something that we were actually considering pivoting to, because we didn't really see Kombini taking off. So the second most, I think, bothersome question for us, apart from the food, was housing. So, and then, yeah, when we were seriously considering kind of building that idea further, things started to happen, and we ultimately got keys to the property. It took a lot mm-hmm. of effort. We weren't just waiting. I was knocking on the doors, the landlords, going to have teas with them, presenting the idea, trying to convince them. And it just, a lot of things happened. And we had to approach it in a very unorthodox way, bypassing the agent and stuff like that. So it took a long time for us to get the property. But once we did that, everything happened very quickly. So it opened in February, mid-February.
Which year?
2018. And we were working on it from the summer before, because it included the internship months. So we were basically going at it full head, you know, head on from August the year before, and then we got it off the ground in February.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're someone who always has quite a lot of different things going on. I mean, obviously you started this as a student while you were still in uni, and then you did your internship while also still working on this project and this business. How do you manage your time? Do you think you're good at multitasking, or do you think it's necessary for you to have multiple, like, energy outlets?
I'm terrible at multitasking. I think the reason why I started the business during college was mainly because of the itch of once you've started it, and I didn't really get to see my business through in the States, fallouts and stuff like that. But funnily, we had an offer from, like, a software entrepreneur. He had, like, the second top personal finance managing app on App Store at the time, and he had a big farm in Vermont. He moved with his family and was working remotely, and he offered to buy the business.
Oh.
Yeah, because he wanted something that's actually physical in that area. And so we had interesting journey, but I wasn't going to be an ice cream, you know, entrepreneur. And so, you know, and then I had to go to college. Mm-hmm. So, and I didn't think I would drop out for an ice cream brand. No offense. I mean, I have ice cream brands. Ben and Jerry's is remarkable. Mm-hmm. And it was good business. You know, we were doing well, but my journey of learning hadn't ended then. So I moved to the UK, and then ever since, because I felt like I got to start the business, I got to experience all of that, but it wasn't enough. So I felt like I needed to explore more. My journey of learning in terms of, you know, starting and running a business was still incomplete. So I think I was just very eager to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I do tend to have to busy myself, yes, but I think it's a very different experience when you start a business as a student versus when you are not a student anymore. Everyone's busy. Everyone's got their day jobs. And the experience of running the business was very different from when I was a student versus when I wasn't. And I think that's a very important thing to consider if you're trying to start something as a student. It's not all going to be a Facebook Mark Zuckerberg story.
Mm-hmm.
and especially if a business is very personal to you and it's very geography or culture based, you've got to realize that also, you know, whether it is scalable beyond, you know, the problems you had as a student in that very moment of time. And there are other questions that you have to ask yourself. Yeah. What was the question?
I was asking how you manage your time.
I'm not a good multitasker, and I right now, so Konbini, and then obviously we started this podcast project, Asian Changemakers, which is a very personal project of mine, and I don't have the kind of expectations or the stress or financial risk as something like starting a business. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot less pressure and it's more joy. And then obviously music, which I started again. So between those three, I've got to make time somehow. So I don't socialize. I don't go and enjoy the city. My weekends are just podcasts and music. And you gotta make time somehow. So Konbini, even when I started as a student, like I wasn't doing the student things, you know. So my university life was cut short in half in a way. And it's a double-edged sword.
Did you get any FOMO from that?
No, not really. Because my idea of having a good time, even when I was a university student, was having a warm, having a delicious meal with, interesting people,
mm-hmm.
in a dim light, listening to jazz and talking for 3-4 hours about things that, you know, bring something out of me, right? Out of each other. I was going to jazz bars, you know, jazz, listen to jazz and blues and stuff like that since even I was a teenager. So for me, like, there isn't that FOMO, yes, but there are certain definitely journeys or adventures that you could go on if you were carefree and you were a student and you didn't have other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a motorcycle. So after I started Konbini, and that was my way of sort of living a bit of that, but. So yeah, right now, in order to manage my time, you got to give up on other things. But I do it because like I love doing it, you know. But to be honest, right now, apart from Edinburgh project and Konbini, it's, you know, I've got really amazing people in the team. It's not as hectic and all pressure on me as it was before. So that's what happens as your business matures, you know. It'll be a different... We will be on a different stage, obviously, when we're in a new city and we open a larger operation. But we've got the know-hows and we've got the people. We're not starting from scratch.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of value in having a business that have been going on for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is unlike, obviously it's, you know, it was a startup, but would it be considered a startup, you know, still? I don't know. It's a business. It's an established business that is now taking a new leap forward, but yeah.
And how did you mentioned like now you have people that are remarkable and help you a lot on the team. How did you go about finding those?
So I think if you're starting a business and you have to hire team members, you should personally hire them until it is no longer possible for you mm-hmm. to do it. Because that's, I think, the most important part. And initially the first 10, I think, team staff that we work with, but they were all part-time, right? They were all our friends, but none of them knew each other. So they were all like, you know, battle tested, and we knew that they were good people, but it wasn't going to create a cliquey environment because mm-hmm. no one knew each other. And that's what we liked, but also disliked about Taste. It's like it was impossible to get a coffee without like them just talking for, you know, it just, we didn't enjoy that. It was a very clicky vibe. It was a lot more clicky than like back then. Also, they didn't take cards and it was all cash only and stuff.
It was more clicky back then than it is now.
Oh, is it still very much like that?
I don't know.
Okay. So yeah, that's the start. But ultimately when you're getting, full-time employees and stuff like that involved, to me, when I meet with somebody and I do a job interview, I don't pay as much attention to the things they're saying, but to the way they're saying things and the mm-hmm. eye contact, the feel, I do make these calls based on intuition. I like pure people. You know, how do you sense a purity in somebody? Someone who is not taking themselves too seriously, someone who is, you know, full of joy, and that you can sense the pureness from a person, from their energy. And I wanted to create a team where we had that in common. Mm-hmm. So that was the most important part for me. And some of the longest, you know, serving employees that we have are been with me for 5+ years. One of whom is actually has moved down to Edinburgh to help work on this new project in Edinburgh. We have a manager from the Philippines who was a teacher beforehand, and I love that about her. So kind, and they're all very hardworking. I brought an employee from Korea I met in the Marine Corps. He was a cook in the Marines. What I liked about him was that in the Marines, as you start from a junior Marine until you become a senior Marine, a lot changes. Everyone's a kind sheep when you're a junior Marine. Mm-hmm. Because you're afraid of everything, so you got to look nice and kind and all that. As you get more power, as you become a senior Marine later through your national service, people change with the power, right? That's the real side. And I think that the true kind of essence of a person is the difference between, you know, the Marine Corps, how they are as a person, as a senior, most senior Marine, and how they were as a person when they were most junior Marine. If that difference is less, I think then, you know, you are a pretty good person. And this kid, Chite, that I brought and sponsored his visa, he was a guy that difference was near zero. And he's super hardworking. He's really kind, just great to be around. And how I manage my time, actually, he helps me save a lot of time by, you know, when I'm busy, he's cooking for me and I get to eat healthy. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that. And
very sweet. And if there's anything you could tell someone who's listening from St. Andrews or beyond, in terms of advice, who is looking to start something new, what would it be?
So there are basic like standard questions you ask yourself in terms of the viability of the business, right? First is, okay, is this business going to be successful? Is there a market for it? Understanding that as much as possible, understanding the nature of the business, because obviously there are many kinds. If you're starting a tech startup, the process of starting that and building that would be very different from something that is physical and that is cash flowing, like our business. So first figuring that out, and then depending on that, the advice would, I think, differ. But I think generally speaking, you know, people say, okay, what problem are you solving? And is it worth solving that problem, and how relevant it is for your customers and stuff like that, or your market? Yes. Yes, but anyone can justify anything. You can figure out, you can justify a problem that is not really a problem. Mm-hmm. This, a product that doesn't solve a problem, but is something that people didn't even know they needed or wanted. So, you know, it's, you know, you can justify it in any way. And your business doesn't necessarily have to solve a specific problem in order to succeed, but it is easier to focus on solving a problem because then it helps you focus. It's a lot easier to build a business, I think, that way than to just say, I want to create something that people love. Mm-hmm. There's a value and it's because it's different. Whereas, you know, the competitor comes from price or stuff like that. It's harder to build a business like that. So despite our business being closer to, you know, lifestyle, and it is food and beverage, we approached it more as, okay, we need to make a convenient solution that is beautiful aesthetically, and that is it's also healthy. Like, we need to solve those three problems. Those are the attributes that we need to focus on that helped us focus. Because when you create something, when you build something, you can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. So you need to figure out what are the main attributes that are most important to you and your customers. So that's the first part of understanding your business. Then the second part, which I don't think people oftentimes consider, is whether it is worth doing it, whether it is worth doing this for you personally, and what it would mean if you did this. The moment you start something is responsibility. Mm-hmm. So you have to really be pragmatic and honest about whether this is worth doing, or I just want to do it because of the experience or something that comes with it. It's a serious business. So if you're going to commit, then you got to really know what this means for you, whether it is worth doing it for yourself. That is after whether there's a marketability and success, you know, whether you can have success. And then that's the important sort of last hurdle, I think.
Very insightful words of wisdom. Thank you so much. It's great. It's always great having you.
One last thing, I think very important in terms of business that are founded based on relationships, so co-founders and stuff like that, which are going to be most businesses, you've got to expect the worst and prepare for the worst in terms of that relationship falling out. So nothing personal, you got to do a prenup. So there's a concept called reverse vesting. There are a lot of foundational work in terms of structuring the business that's very important. How you split the equity, you got to get the right advice early on. You know, how you go about the equity cap table, because if you don't get that right and then you raise investments, it can get very messy. In terms of founder relationships, you need to put in writing and agree with each other that, look, we're going to commit, let's say, 3 or 4 years. And so if we do 50-50, right, and that's sweat equity you're working towards, if you or I leave, before we complete those 4 years, we need to give back a quarter to, you know, half, 3/4 of the shares. So we only keep the shares in which we completed, we've sort of earned, because things don't always work out the way you expect them to. And even if it's nothing personal, something happens, personal relations between the two founders, but something happens to their family and they've got to be home, or, you know, circumstances change, you at least have a clear expectation and guidelines of how to deal with those instances. I would say that's very, very important.
That's good to know. Thank you so much for your insights.